Our world is magical. Games are magical. Open your eyes and prepare to discover how magic and games intersect.
Merry meet and welcome to Covenstead, a podcast about gaming and magic.
This episode is brought to you by the One-Legged GM. Brian Donahue is the One-Legged GM. Okay, technically he's a one and a third-legged GM, but that just doesn't really work. He is an author of fiction and nonfiction, and the writer and creator of Hidden Worlds Incursion, that uses his own unique system. You can find a link to his YouTube channel in the show notes.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Covenstead podcast. I am Todd. I am one of your hosts for tonight. And standing here next to me, my gracious co-host, partner in crime, friend, and coven mate, Danny. Say hello, Danny.
Hello. Hi, everybody.
So today, when this episode drops, we're basically a couple of days away from Earth Day. And we were trying to find a topic that would be something appropriate, because especially too, this Wicca features so prominently on the show, it seemed like doing something for Earth Day seemed appropriate. And we actually kind of got on something that is, I think like a very environmentally appropriate topic. One of the things we wanted to get into was the role of digital versus print tools and accessory when it comes to witchcraft and gaming, which is another one of those things where I'd like to think that they share in common, but at the same time, too, I don't know for sure. And that's why I have people like Danny around to basically ask questions specifically of just be like, hey, do witches use tablets? You know?
Right. I'm trying to think of how to put this. Because Wicca is such an individualized thing, as I have said many, many times over the many, many episodes, people kind of find what works for them. But if you go online and you research digital books of shadows, you can find them. Like, you can find that people can use it, like, and have a file on their desktop that's their book of shadows, and they type in all the information that they want. They use graphics and everything to make it look pretty. And that's a thing. It saves a space, so you don't have to carry a big, huge book around. Especially if you've been practicing for years. You know what I mean? Like, if you've been practicing a long time, you know, all that information, you know, in a book, you know, that gets, you know, really heavy and really big and long. And not exactly easy sometimes to find the thing you're looking for. Because, you know, as you're adding to it, a kind of analog, I guess I'll call it analog, because if it's not digital, it's analog, like an analog book of shadows, like an actual paper journal that you have, doesn't necessarily lend itself to a traditional journal that's bound, doesn't exactly lend itself to like organizing information. So I know some witches actually use like a 3-ring binder, so they can add pages and put things in different sections and stuff like that if they want. But with digital, you don't have to do that. You can just put the page wherever you want it. And it's a little bit easier to find stuff because you can type it in. You know, you can type in a search depending on what kind of file it is. Type in the word you want to try to find the piece that you're looking for. It can hold a lot more information. You know, you don't have to have 2 or 3 journals or binders to make up your book of shadows, you know. So there's lots of benefits, plus the earth benefit that you're not using, using up resources and things like that. In that sense, I mean, you're using up digital resources, but not paper or trees or anything like that. So there's no real one wrong way, you know, the wrong way to do it. It's kind of like, what do you want to be able to do with your book of shadows? You know, do you want it to be kind of more of a showpiece? Do you want to be useful? Are you going to have like a showpiece journal and then something that you use to look up information? Those are questions that you ask yourself when you start practicing. In terms of like other ways in terms of just not digital or in, I mean, books that you can find definitely can be digital. You know, you can find books on witchcraft and witchcraft that are digital, read them on your Kindle or whatever. That's a thing. So yeah, I mean, there's plenty of stuff about witchcraft that can be digital, on digital. There's even a book, something like The Digital Witch or something like that. And it's all about technology and using it. Hang on just a second. Let me do the technology. Yeah, I should have looked this up beforehand, but.
That's okay. We are a zero prep podcast. That's our specialty.
Tech Witch. It's called Tech Witch, Practices for the Age of the nice. Internet. So that's, nice. You know, something you can look up. And the New York Times even did an article, Space Pagans and Smartphone Witches, where tech meets mysticism. Tech Witch Selection, finding on Etsy. What the heck is this? What is this? Yeah, tablets and things like that. Okay. Like decorating your tablet with like symbols and stuff like that. So if it's a technical book of shadows, yeah. You can put stuff around like the case of your Kindle and stuff like that. That's pretty cool. Charms you can attach to your, yeah.
Yeah, like I could even see like a phone or tablet case that actually looks like a leather book. And then when you open it up, your tablet is inside. So that you can treat that. It makes me think kind of like what they had in the movie version of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where right. It looked like a book, but it was actually a computer when you open it up.
Right.
So
right.
It has that kind of hybrid kind of look to it, but it functions in the 21st century.
Yeah. Digital witchy bundle, witchy dated planner, tarot card, digital stickers, widgets for your phone. A lot of us, you know, in terms of stuff we put on our phone, digital information and things like that, we use Moonface apps. That's common astrological apps and things like that to keep track of stuff. Apps on looking up properties of herbs or crystals or things like that. So a lot of resource apps are easy to keep on your phone to look up, like when you're shopping and stuff like that. Those are good. You know, shops where you can buy supplies, you know, there's apps for things that you can look for. So there's lots of ways that, you know, Wicca, witchcraft and all of that can be digitized and is digitized and used so that we can exchange information, which is something that we didn't really have a lot before. But it's interesting to see what creativity people do because everyone kind of does what works for them. So it's always nice to see the ideas that everyone comes up with. And figures out how they mix, you know, digital stuff and online communication with, you know, analog stuff and making their own things. There's a website called Witchvox, which is all about meetups and stuff like that. If you want to meet other pagans or festivals that are going on or markets and things like that, you know. We use a lot of Facebook groups and Twitter and all sorts of social media and stuff, just like everybody else. So, yeah, I mean, there's plenty of stuff online if you're a witch and everything. And it has expanded people's ideas of it quite a bit because, you know, we didn't have that back in the day, you know. So if you're a practicing pagan, being able to find some people to work with or find out about it is not so easy. And it's a lot easier nowadays. You know, when I moved to Phoenix, I was able to like Google groups and stuff like that and see what kind of pagan groups were here, stores, metaphysical stores and stuff like that. So, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, there's lots of ways that is improved to be able to communicate and keep in touch with other pagans and things like that. You know, we have several nice stores in town and stuff like that, and those are online. So, yeah, there's lots of stuff in terms of Wicca that you can do.
Yeah, yeah. And the reason why I asked the question that way is because when we get to the RPG side of things at the very least, actually, when we get into just tabletop gaming in general, it is such a traditionally physical space that has only just recently kind of been breached because of the pandemic where, you know, like we were not getting together physically with people anymore, mm-hmm. that it's like, I could very much see that anyone who is just starting to learn about Wicca and witchcraft would have this assumption, like I did initially, I'm going to totally admit, you know, having this bias of trying to recreate something specifically from 300 to 400 years ago, when mm-hmm. it's not that. It is a modern interpretation. And so as a result, the idea of incorporating more and more modern tools into it, it makes total sense. So yeah, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to kind of and phrase the question in that way, because it does very much seem from the research that I've been doing, everything that you just listed off, witchcraft actually seems to be more in the 21st century, more accessible to digital mm-hmm. tools than gaming. You know, there's still hardcore holdouts on the gaming sphere of stuff. But it, I mean, for you, or is there anything in particular where it's you like to go old school with it? You like to have, you know, something very tactile, very traditional.
You know, I mean, there's always something about clacketing dice. You know what I mean? I mean, sure, there's dice rollers online and stuff like that. But come on, you're not going to get the satisfaction as having nice sparkety math rocks and clackety rollers and stuff like that, you know. So there's something about that I always, you know, I don't really use dice rollers unless I have to online. You know, I have all my dice and some that are gifts, you know, like what I mean. So like, you know, gamers give dice as gifts. So there's something about that. And there's also that something, I mean, because you and I, when we got into gaming, I mean, things like Roll20 or Critical Role or games online and things like that were just not a thing. I mean, they just weren't.
No.
Right? So to us, gaming was like the cover of the book. You know what I mean? You see the cover of the D&D manual or the cover of Vampire the Masquerade. And it just immediately makes all these associations in your brain and in your mind and, you know, is nostalgic and opening the book and finding the art and knowing the art and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, I tend to prefer the books and the dice, you know, and everything like that, in terms of like what I prefer to have tactile. But that's not to say that like I don't appreciate that stuff is online and easily shareable and PDFs and things like that. I think that's just a matter of my age personally. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, if I never grew up with any of that, then I might not feel the same way. But, you know, there's something about opening up and about, you know, the love and care and layout and art that goes into a hardcover RPG book that I love. You know, buying the book for the first time and opening it up and checking out the art and the new book smell and the aesthetics that they put into it and the effort they put into it and the artists and the writing and everything like that. I don't know, somehow seems a lot more real when you have the book and like the experience of getting it and opening up and reading it and diving into it and exploring a new world and stuff for me, you know.
Same. Like even too, like what you said with the dice, it's kind of one of those things where it's like I can't look at the little die icons on my phone and say no, I don't want to roll that one. That one's unlucky. I don't know. It's a two-dimensional representation. But I know which of the dice in my box I want to roll at this particular moment. I have dice. I roll as the GM because they mm-hmm. tend to roll lower. Even though all the numbers are assigned the same way, they're not trick dice or anything else like this, these ones tend to roll a little lower. I don't need to kick ass as the GM. I'm trying to kind of boost everybody up. But then I've got my player dice where it's like, yes, if there's going to be something that rolls a natural 20, it's these blue ones, so I will use the blue ones when I play. And with books, I mean, the one thing that, for me, I'm a former press operator. So I spent 2 years in college learning how to do the graphic design work, but also, too, learning how to operate offset presses. Mm-hmm. So for me, making a book is something I've actually learned and have done. Like, I have not had the luxury of actually printing one of my own books, like actually taking it off the press and do the binding myself and everything like that. That would be a magical thing that maybe someday on a bucket list. But for me, when I get a new book in the mail, I open it up and I smell the pages because that's how I know if it's done offset or if it's done digital. And when offset, what I mean is like on a traditional printing press where everything is actually etched onto plates and then ink is applied and then it's rolled onto the paper as it's fed through sheet by sheet or on a web press. So, and I can, and I know the smell of the chemical that's used to kind of counter with the ink itself. And that's what I smell for. And that is a really kind of pleasant smell to me, even though it's a very nauseous smell in large quantities. But, you know, so yeah, that whole very tactile and having a book is very precious to me. Because I know firsthand the work and everything that goes into making it.
Right.
I basically understand, like I understand how PDFs are made. And I think I have a rudimentary knowledge on how computers work to how I can actually see it on my computer. But at the same time too, yeah, it just doesn't have the same kind of appeal to me. Like I have a whole bunch of gaming related PDFs and I've downloaded some, you know, witchcraft PDFs. But if I really want to read and retain something, I need a physical book. If I really intend to run a game, I will buy a physical version of it and read through it at my leisure. Because it just retains in my brain that way. For me, working on digital devices, they're the same devices I use to create other stuff. And it is way too easy for me to see something and then go, that makes me think of something, and then close that window and open another one, and then I'm not reading anymore. Now I'm writing, now I'm sketching, or whatever the case may be. Right, whereas a book is specifically a book, I don't want to doodle on it, I don't want to tear it, I don't even like, you know, cracking the spine. I open new books in a very particular way to basically kind of massage the spine so it doesn't have the creases that go along it. I'm very, very careful with as many books as possible. And yeah, it's just one of those things. And it could be a generational thing.
It could be. But I know for me, you know.
Very much so. Because that's how we started. That's how we learned. You know, new technology gets harder and harder to learn as time goes on. But it's, I don't know. It's kind of one of those things where I have been trying more and more to use digital tools, and especially too because, well, there used to be a price difference. There used to be a significant price difference. That has since changed when it became more and more common for writers to be paid 10 cents a word, like we talked about in the last episode. And so as a result, publishers started to see that the PDF also had value. It wasn't just a poor man's book. You know, it's just like, well, no one really buys PDFs. And the whole stigma, at least in the gaming industry, that everything's going to be stolen is pretty much been washed away. And now publishers embrace digital tools. You know, there's been a lot of differences that have happened and everything over the years. But yeah, still when it comes down to it, if I want to actually play something, I want a physical copy of the book. You know, so that I can read it, digest it, and I want to roll physical dice online, face-to-face, riding on a bus, lying sideways on the road, doesn't matter, physical dice for me, like, every single time.
Yeah, and like you said, it could be a generational thing for us. Now, you know, in and around, like, technology is hard. I don't know if it's necessarily that for me. I mean, I grew up. When I was a kid, you know, there weren't home computers. We didn't have cell phones. We didn't have internet or anything like that. So I've grown up over the years where technology has moved so fast. So I feel like my generation, I'm 43, are pretty good about adapting technology. But it's more like, what did I know? What do I prefer? What am I nostalgic for? You know what I mean? And there's some, I mean, like, and as you say, because of our generation, because I think the other thing that happens with physical dice and physical books is that we get stories. So you were talking about dice being unlucky or lucky, but like, I have a set of crystal quartz dice, gemstone dice, that were a gift from my husband. You know, I have a set of original Hunter dice from, you know, Hunter the Reckoning, you know, like the orange and whatever. I have a couple dice that a friend gave me at one point. You know, like these ones have stories. Like, we used to also sometimes, if we were preparing for a really intense game, we would buy specific sets of dice to have for that character. Like when we played Call of Cthulhu, my husband and I played Call of Cthulhu. He was running it, and what he did was he had two characters, a modern and a 1920s. And so the story spanned those two time periods, and we had a character in each time period that we were playing. And so I had a set of dice for each one of my characters, my character from the 1920 and my modern character. You know what I mean? And it just like helped, you know? Yeah. So all of that stuff ends up having stories, your books. You know, oh, I got this book from a friend of mine from my birthday. Oh, see this mark in it and writing in it? That's from, you know, when I did this, that, and the other thing, you know, like, you know, I mean, they get stories, they get a life, and they get a history to them, your dice and your books, I think, when you're an older gamer, you know.
Yeah, that makes me think, and I know this is going to be totally unfair to all of our listeners because we're in audio-only format, but I'm going to grab my Earth Dawn First Edition book. Because now that I'm using a webcam, I love how this podcast is basically documenting my entry into the 21st century. Like I was frozen in time, Captain America style. And it's just be like, you know what album you need to listen to? And I just write it down on a notepad. But let me go get my book because this book, it was the only game I took with me when I went to film school in Toronto. For some reason, I thought, nah, this will be fine. And I ended up reading that book so much. I got to show it to you so that we get your reaction to seeing it, and then I'll describe it.
Sure, for sure. And of course you have it like right there, right next to your desk. Of course you do.
Yes, I do. So I have my Earth Dawn First Edition.
Wow, that's
classic.
Now,
the first
classic
thing you're
going
to notice, Danny, look at the spine has no printing on it at all.
Wow.
In fact, you can actually see the signatures, which are kind of like when all the pages are kind of folded up into sections.
Yeah.
It still holds. I'm actually rubbing my finger against the dried glue. That's the only thing keeping it all together. It's
that is
very
a well-loved book.
So remember I said, yes, most of my books are very well cared for, but this one, I lovingly beat the shit out of this thing, you know, because it now bends. It's a hardcover book that bends like a softcover. That's how much I've read this sucker over and over and over. Like when I was asked to do some writing for the fourth edition of the game, even though I hadn't read any of it in at least 20 years, it was very easy for me to recall stuff. And I'm not very good on recollection. You know, it's very easy for me to forget a lot of details. But with this, because I read it so much. And yeah, so I mean, like, that's why, I mean, I sold my Planescape stuff last year because I wasn't reading it. And I also didn't have any interest in playing it or anything like that. And the nostalgia and everything had worn off. This book, I wouldn't sell no matter what. I plan on being buried with this thing. And it's not just because there's no way anyone would take it. You know, it's because it's so personal. It's so treasured. And I've gone through so much to keep it over the years. At one point, I thought I lost it.
Oh.
And went to a lot of trouble and tracked it down and found out I'd left it at somebody's place. And that was a person that I was just like, I really hoped I wasn't going to see anymore, but I was going to see him to get the book back. It was going to be worth putting up whatever BS I had to put up with to get the book back.
Yeah.
I would have broken into their house to get this book back.
Right, right. So there's, I mean, in all honesty, I think in an ideal world, we'd end up becoming like a hybrid of digital and analog. Because as we taught, the analog has all these advantages of the stories, being able to hold it in your hands, creating memories with this analog stuff that you're using, flipping the pages, rolling the dice, the smells, passing the books among your friends. You know, back in the day, you know, a couple of us had the vampire books, so they would be passed around when somebody needed to make a new character, you know, because we were college kids, not all of us could afford, you know, to have the books and everything. And so there's that. And then, of course, there's, you know, the adventure of going to a brick and mortar gaming store, because that was the community, right? And so if you're getting all digital stuff, you don't get that. You know, you would go in there and you'd see what new games were out. You'd talk amongst your friends, you know, you would buy things for your character and stuff like that. You know, you'd just go with your gaming group and you guys would just go to the gaming store and handle all the stuff and look and talk about it and everything like that. So there's that. But I don't want to harp on, but I feel like we should end up in an ideal world being a hybrid, because there's that. But let's not also forget the advantages of digital and all that stuff. I talked about Wicca and making things accessible for Wiccans and people who are in rural places or you know, being able to communicate with other pagans and find your people. But that's the same for gaming. You know, it's the same exact situation where the internet and digital stuff has made things more accessible to a bunch more people. And more people have learned about the hobby. You know, before you had to know people who were into it, who would then bring you into it. But now that people have started, I mean, could you imagine? Well, let's be real here. In 1997, when I started college, my freshman year, and I started gaming. All right, so what's that? 2023 now, so 20 years ago? 26 years ago. Would I have ever thought, I would have found it hilarious that people were like, yeah, you could go on the internet and you could watch people role play. Like, it just wasn't a thing. It just was not a thing. But because we have things like these role playing shows and all of this other stuff, more people have found out what this hobby is. Like, more people have actually been able to see what it is instead of the assumptions they make, you know? Because it's really funny when people actually see it, how it's nothing like they thought it was, right? And then they see it and they're like, oh, hey, I thought it was this, that, and the other thing, but this is actually pretty cool, right? Like, I'm getting into it, you know? So that is an immense benefit to having the internet and having people run their campaigns online on YouTube, having PDFs for free or available that people can just download and look at it and see what it's all about instead of having to go to a store and flipping through and stuff like that. So it's made things accessible, not only for people to find out about the game and access the information, but let's talk about communication, right? I mean,
yeah,
I have a game, you know, my home game, that I play. And, you know, back in the day, you would only be believe people would go over to somebody's house. Somebody would bring snacks. You know, it was like a whole thing. And it was a thing that people got together with. But my group, my home group, the one I play with every single week on Saturdays, is a Zoom group. Two of my people are in Philadelphia and my husband and I are here in Phoenix and another one is in Texas. Okay. But because we have technology, we can play together and make all these memories together and still have a great group and everything like that, you know, and we keep and we can do things that enhance our game that we've never been able to do in the past. Like way back in the day when I was in college and we had an Aberrant game, one of the players made a burn CD of like a soundtrack for our game. But, like, that was, like, a lot of effort, nice. Right? Like, you know, everybody had to pick a song, and then he had to find them and then burn them on the CD. Like, I still have it. It's, like, right there. And, like, I still have it, and I've had that since I was in college. But now, my group that I play with on Saturday, we have a Spotify playlist for our game that we just add songs to when we feel the need. Like, oh, hey, here's a song that really speaks to my character, or this song really speaks to this scene, you know, like, or this part of the game or whatever, you know, we add it. You know, and art and sharing stories and things like that. We did that like back in the day, and I still have in my files some stories that people wrote out and printed about the game that we were playing at the time, the Aberrant game we were playing. Really cute, you know, and printed out like in paper and stuff like that. But now I have a whole Google Drive of art and stories and extra bits and things that are players have done. We would do stuff like if you couldn't make it a certain week, like if we couldn't get together, I would tell them, I'll give you some experience points if over the following week or whatever, whenever we play again, you create some kind of art, you know, write a poem, write a short story, you know, add some songs to the playlist, you know, draw something, whatever you want to do. And I will give you experience points for it. And people did. And it adds to our game. And it's easier to do than it would have been in the past. So all those things are benefits to having digital with RPGs, in my opinion. And there is still something about analog that works as well. So in my personal opinion, my ideal world, we would have hybrids, you know? I mean, people would use analog and do it and whatever, but then we would also be able to take advantage of all the accessibility and enhancement that digital can bring to the gaming experience, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and going back to what you were saying about actual plays, think about how with our generation, we learn to play by reading these books and thinking we understood what was going on, and then learning by trial and error. And I hear it so many times when I listen to, there's a podcast I listen to, it's a fantastic tabletop interview show called Tabletop Talk, go figure. And the host always asks this origin question, how did you get into gaming? You know, you didn't know what these things were, and then all of a sudden day you discovered it, what was that game? And you constantly hear so many stories of these people stumbling their way through it. And then it wasn't until they played with another group and then they saw how that group played. Like, it's so strange that a hobby that had so much trial and error, that was just like everything was written down in meticulous detail, and yet you really gotta try it. Like, that's really what it came down to, is just you gotta take these principles and you just gotta roll with it and see what works for you.
Yeah.
But having these actual plays, it is so amazingly easy to just, you know, press play and then you start to get a feel for it. And there's a greater simplicity in being able to see it in action rather than describing it in detail. I had a potential vendor was asking me to describe how my game High Plains Samurai is played. And I think I made it worse. I should have just said, okay, I'm going to send you off this character sheet, grab a couple dice, I'm going to play you through a scenario. But instead, I started to get into a verbal explanation of how the game worked. And I think he has more questions than walking away. Because it's this really abstract thing when you think about it, you know, it sometimes it almost kind of feels like describe how you talk, but without getting into the physics of how your throat makes the noise or that air is coming out of your mouth. Describe how you talk without getting into the science of it. It's kind of like, I know how that, but how do I describe it to someone from another planet that maybe doesn't talk? You know, how do I describe that to a species that is entirely psychic?
Right.
So it's one of those things. The digital tools, I think one of the reasons why there has been this increase is because it's much easier to teach nowadays. It also seems too like all the books when it first started off had a section about what are role-playing games. How do they work? What do they do? All this other kind of stuff. Now, there's just a little blurb in the introduction that says, like, if you've ever watched Critical Role or, you know, or Big Bang Theory or Community or these other kind of TV shows, you get it. That's exactly what it is. And now we're going to move on and teach you how to play this particular game. So it does make things a lot easier. It also provides that flexibility to do things in less time than it would take otherwise. Mm-hmm. So there is a greater variety of experience that you can get with digital. Like the number of people, like what you said with your group, the players you get to play with is way more open now. It simply comes down to, are we all available around the same time, regardless of time zones? You and I aren't in the same time zone. We're in, you know, you're on the Pacific, by the Pacific Ocean, I'm by the Atlantic Ocean. And yet, if we tried to do this pen and paper style...
yeah, that'd be hilarious.
it would be the slowest newsletter ever.
Indeed. Yeah, and not only that, but, you know, we talked about actual plays, but also let's mention how many channels are out there that are talking about how to run a game, how to, you know, player etiquette and things like that. Like, you can go on and get tips. I mean, our books would have, you know, GM sections in the back. We all know that, right? You know, cracking it open. If you're a GM, here's how to run a game. But nowadays, you can go on YouTube. And you can have all of these GMs with videos giving you tips and giving you ideas and expanding your skill set that before you would just have to do on the fly and teach yourself. There was no one to teach you unless you knew a GM, right? Unless you were a player and your GM was kind of showing you what they did. That was kind of it. But nowadays, that's not a hindrance at all. And not only, I mean, because even then you would only get one perspective, right? You get the person who was teaching you. You would get that. But now you can go on YouTube and watch so many GMs with so many different styles and how they do things, you know, and tips and how they handle certain situations, you know, how they handle player disagreements. How do they handle combat? How do they handle intrigue? How do they handle a planning? You know what I mean? Like, so many tips and tricks that are out there that we now have accessible that we didn't before, you know? Just FYI, or, you know, how to build a character or how to give your character a backstory, you know, things that we never thought of before. And here's that were not available before. And here's another aspect of it that I had mentioned before. We've talked about all the great things that have happened with RPGs being digital. So many good things, expanding resources, being able to learn, having access to people who can play, et cetera, et cetera. But the advent of RPGs and all of that becoming online, to me, has also created kind of a third class of people. Mm. Okay, so let me explain, because I don't mean like third class, like lower tier. I mean a type. Okay, because before you would have people who ran games, GMs, storytellers, guides, whatever you wanted to call them, people who play. That was it. That was what you had. Okay. Now, you also have this third in between where it's like you're also a content creator and in a professional level that we've kind of created. You know what I mean? Because back in the day, it wouldn't be perceived that you would get paid to play games, or you would be online and you would be an online personality role-playing or anything like that, and making money off of it and making money off a channel. It's like this other level of being like a pro at something. You know what I mean? Because there are the people who did the hobby and people who made stuff for the hobby. You know, there are people who ran it and published and everything like that, and then people who played. Now you've got people who don't publish, but they play and they make other kind of content. That's sort of like a step up, right? So now you have people who just play at home and they run their games. And then you have people who publish and write for role-playing games, do layout, do graphics, do art, and all of that stuff. But now you have a third type of person who makes another type of living off of that, who makes a living off of it instead by either running actual plays or a GM advice blog or writing a book about it or something like that. It's this other kind of area of content that we never had before, of a different type, which is really interesting. And it's cool in a lot of ways. It's different. And in other ways, it's sort of, and keep in mind, I'm not dissing anybody who does any of this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But it has, in some ways, in my opinion, as someone who started 26 years ago and watched the industry and the role-playing game universe change, it's also created this expectation, right? It's created, because if you were just playing by yourself and your friends, you had no idea what was right or wrong or how to play or anything like that. But now that we have access to all these different ways of doing things, people feel the need to judge or have expectations about what their game should be or how they should play and stuff like that. And in some cases, it's a good thing in terms of safety and not triggering your players and a whole bunch of other stuff. But in some ways, in terms of other stuff, it's been not so great. You know, now you're comparing yourself to other GMs. You know, now you're comparing yourself to other players.
Yeah.
And so now you have these expectations that weren't there before. You know, before you were just playing the game and you were doing what you were doing, you were doing what worked for you, and you had no idea if it was right or wrong or good or bad or whatever. But now there's this expectation and means that people can judge you, right? And I don't know as if that's something that really helps us. And so I think as an industry, as players and GMs and people who produce stuff, we have to be mindful of that, right? We have to be mindful of kind of creating these expectations and judgment, you know, in the industry and in the hobby, you know?
Yeah, for sure. There's definitely the production values and everything that are now, you know, very visible. I've never watched Critical Role. I even have a hard time watching actual plays for games I made. There's a six part AP of Pandora Total Destruction, and I'm just on part five. And it's not because it's like, oh, they're ruining it. They're doing it exactly as intended. For the most part, there's a couple little things where it's just like, oh, I can see why they're struggling with right. that part. But it's more so just because it's like, to me, it's the watching actual plays isn't as stimulating to me. I think much in the same way where it's just like, anytime I've gone to see a stage production of something, unless it is flabbergastingly good... Mm-hmm. It's very easy for my mind to wander and get into like the technical aspects of everything that is going on. Kind of like with watching movies, because I, you know, mind you, my knowledge is now very out of date because I learned when you could only shoot things on film. But the basic how to's of how movies are made, unless a movie really, really floors me and really sucks me in, there's a lot of times where I'm paying attention to the cuts in the movie and everything else like this. It's just like there's an infamous scene in the movie Taken 3 where I think it's like 17 or 18 cuts just to show Liam Neeson's character. And I say that because you can totally tell it's a stunt person. Poor old Liam Neeson. He's not jumping any fences anymore. But it's like 17 cuts of just one character jumping over a fence. Just to get from one side of the fence to the other. 17 cuts, that kind of frenetic pace. And that's the kind of stuff, I just get very caught up in that kind of stuff. Yeah. So that's one of the main things for me with actual plays, is that they can be difficult. But it's, yeah, the production values and everything that go into it, they do kind of give this impression. Mm-hmm. But I think it's something that, personally, I think that that's a little bit more temporary. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like the same opinion that was made when YouTube first came out and people started to realize that they could make their own content. Yeah, it's not going to look as good as the stuff that you'll see on TV. But there was enough charm to it for enough people that some people actually started to prefer seeing that, you know, quote unquote, more amateur content, mm-hmm. because there was something a little bit more magical about it, because you knew that they don't have the budget to do it. It's kind of like watching a really bad B movie, but it's made with heart,
right?
You know, and you can just really tell that they are really diehard, dedicated filmmakers and actors and everything else like this. you know, they just didn't have a lot to work with, but they found a way to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that this might be a little on the temporary side. But I also think some of that, too, is because with a lot of APs, really big production ones, yeah, they hire voice actors as part of the cast. They have celebrities as part of the cast. But also, too, they run a lot of these big games that have these really big visuals and pieces and, you know, there's like a lot of elements. There's almost always like a board you have to look down on because miniatures are a definite factor in the game and that kind of stuff. It's the ones, yeah, the ones that are more of like our friends over at Rook and Rasp. Like, you've played on a lot of theirs.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that I've seen, they're all narrative focused. You don't cut to a shot of a map, you know, and then see icons moving from one side to the other. You're not worried about the radius it's going to take for you to reach an opponent or something like that. You're looking at a screen that has the faces of the players. You're watching a table that actually plays in progress and everything like that. Those, I think, as time goes on, I think are going to be a little bit more common. And I think that kind of stigma of it's like, oh man, I got to do it just like Critical Role. It's like, no, you can maybe get to that one point. But yeah, I don't find that to be as concerning so much as what concerns me is how this hobby is getting the attention of larger corporations that now want to find a way to monopolize on these digital tools.
Oh no, who could you be talking about?
Oh geez, I don't know. What? I mean, it's not one example.
Yeah.
It's just numerous, it just kind of feels like. But that's, you know, like kind of like we've talked about before. That's my bias on the matter and everything
Right. Right. I mean,
and I think that's kind of one of the things where go ahead.
I was just going to say, because now we have spectators, which is kind of almost that other third class I was talking about. Now you have spectators on your game, you know, watching you and judging what you're doing and making commentary and stuff, which was not a thing. You know, role playing was not a spectator sport. Okay. Like, it was you and your friends. That was it, you know, and now it has this audience spectator aspect to it. That I don't know. And like I said, it's like anything else. You can use it to great effect or not. You know, it's just like you were talking about in film. Like, there's these things with cuts and stuff that can really be detrimental to a film. But like, if you watch something like Edgar Wright, who does all these fast cuts and a ton of them in his movies, he uses them to great effect in his movies. Like Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz and you know, all of that stuff. You know, he uses them to great effect. So, like I'm saying, it's really this you have to look at what the benefits are, really hone those and try to, I think we're still learning that, you know, we're still learning how to get back to that and the kind of expectations that have come with the digital age and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I think you're right. And now it's companies and things like that are seeing this and wanting a piece of it and making money, when before it really was this indie. You know, people knew about it, and people were making books out of their houses and stuff like that. Like, I remember Bill Bridges talking about, like, the start of White Wolf, where they had rented this house, and that was, like, the office of White Wolf. Like, it was just this house that they were having a, you know, whatever, and to start and ship out their books and everything like that, in, like, this residential area, you know, like... That's what it was. And now you know, you've got corporate backing and you've got sponsoring and you've got all these other things. You know what I mean? That you have to figure out, how does that integrate into the hobby? And what does it bring good, and what does it bring bad, and how to minimize the bad stuff, the not so great stuff that it's bringing to the industry. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And I feels to me like that's the one area where I'm actually jealous of digital witchcraft at the moment, because I mean, I don't pay to it attention to it anywhere near as much as I do in gaming circles. Most of that because I have an obsession when it comes to tabletop gaming. I think that's been established. But when it comes to, like, you know, witchcraft and everything, that to me is really come across as being a very singular community of numerous individuals, and individual beliefs. Mm-hmm. Whereas tabletop gaming is a community of factions that every once in a while we meet in the great city of Sigil to declare a truce and maybe have a feast that we call Gen Con. And then we bugger on back to our own worlds and judge and, you know, like, oh, trad games versus story games and this style versus that style. And I prefer to be a game master. You can be a game moderator. You know, kind of stuff like that. Whereas, like, I follow a couple of Facebook groups that are dedicated to witchcraft and Wicca. And I don't see anything that kind of indicates it's like, okay, sorry, but this one's for circle witches only. All you other witches, back off. This has nothing to do with you. It's like anything and everything. It's all open and welcome. And it's kind of one of those things where it feels like Google Plus was when it first started. Like, you know how, you know, so many of us, you know, wax poetic about Google Plus, and there was just something about that was just set up as if like it was, it felt impervious to, you know, your typical social media problems. You know, like it's, that was just like a really welcoming setup and community and everything else like that, that just to me is missing, that I don't see when it comes to online groups for witches and Wiccans.
Right. Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. There are definitely arguments and things like that in Wicca, you know, so it's not all, you know. But, you know, it's definitely not as prevalent, I find, as it is in the RPG groups and stuff like that. Like, it is, or maybe it's just the ones that I join or whatever, but, you know, because what it also creates, you know, with the expectations and the spectatorship and stuff like that, I feel a little sad, because I feel like some of that, and I have heard some of that, that kind of prevents people from starting. Like, it's inspired some people to start watching Critical Role and stuff like that. But it also, it's like, well, if I'm not the perfect player or I'm not the perfect GM, like, I'm not going to bother. You know what I mean? And it's not about that, right? I mean, why do we do it? We do it for the story, and we do it to have fun, and we do it to make up characters and scenarios and feel stuff, you know, and create a story, which is something that we humans are unique in doing. You know, like, we create stories, we have imaginations, you know, among the creatures on Earth, we're unique in that, you know, I feel like, you know, not like other, you know, animals don't like entertain themselves, dance or whatever, or sing or make calls or whatever, but we are kind of unique in our storytelling ability. It's kind of what separates us. And that's why we create things like role-playing games and books and movies and stuff like that, because it's a human nature to tell stories. And I don't think there's going to be anyone that convinces me otherwise. But if you start creating this era of only certain people can do it, you're getting into problems. And like the book industry, the writing industry, and film industry already had that, because it's marketed and corporate and things like that. Like, if you're not the Steven Spielberg, you shouldn't be making movies, you know? Or if you're not Stephen King, why are you going to bother writing? You know what I mean? And those hobbies are not about that. It's not about being the best at it. It's about doing it for doing it, right? You know, if you write stuff, even for yourself, you're a writer. If you make films just for yourself or to put on YouTube or show your friends, you're a filmmaker. You know what I mean? If you act just to entertain your friends and make little scenarios and characters and stuff like that, you're an actor. You know what I mean? Like, and we put so much on like who should be doing it or monetizing it or, you know, what the quality level is, that we forget that. That the act of creating something in and of itself is enough. Sometimes, you know, I mean, you don't want to hurt people for it, and you don't want hateful things to be created. But in general, you know, creating art is for creating art's sake. And only recently have RPGs started to fall in that movie and writer scenario where now you have spectators and an audience who are judging you. and watching you and stuff like that. So the RPG industry is having to figure out how to navigate that, like the film and writing industry have. And we are still fighting it in the writing and film and acting industries and stuff like that, of, you know, encouraging people no matter what to do something, you know, create something. You'll be better for it. And I think it was Kurt Vonnegut that had something like that. Create something, anything, and you'll be, I promise you, you'll be better for it. You'll be better for it. No matter what it is, no matter what the quality is, making it for yourself or making it for a friend, and they're the only ones that are going to see it. It doesn't matter. We create because the act of creating is enough. And the judgment and payment and spectators and all of that stuff should be secondary, but we've kind of put them as a priority. Like, if you're not good enough to make money out of it, then why bother, right? You know, and that's not good. That's not why we do those things, you know. That's a long rant, but...
With long rants are another specialty of ours. There's an intimacy that comes with a physical book, a physical product, in the sense that, you know, whereas digital, has really opened up the doors in so many ways. Like, all the benefits, the pros that we've talked about it in both witchcraft and gaming. At the same time, too, with that increase, there's less intimacy in everything that comes with it. You know, like, if I'm trying to read something on a digital device, unless I have specifically set up that digital device that I don't get alerts, I don't get messages, there's no camera attached to it, I don't have to worry about someone hacking into my son's device, for example, to see him, you know, through his camera without him knowing. I don't have to worry about that when he just picks up a book and he reads the book.
Okay.
And the reason why I mentioned that specifically is because he has a tablet that he got for Christmas. And he had earned it, and, you know, he'd been doing very well in school and everything like that. But he didn't have any games for it. And so he asked about, you know, like, can I get a Pokemon game for my tablet? We went, we took a look, and found something. And it had Pokemon in the title, and it had Pokemon creatures. Okay. And I recognized the Pokemon in the pictures. I'm like, those are Pokemon. I seem to have missed the fact that the game was called Crazy Pokemon Monster Battle.
Mm-hmm.
And that it didn't seem likely that the Pokemon company would use the word crazy in an app title. But what the hecky who? We go and we start downloading it. And the first screen that loads up are a bunch of anime pictures of sexy girls in lingerie cuddling up with Pokemon.
Oh no!
Yeah, oh, and that look of that look of shock on your face is the correct look.
Oh, my God.
I ripped the tablet out of his hands. And of course, then I'm just like, whoa, buddy, whoa. Look, whoa, this one is not for kids.
I'm sorry, you can't play this. Bad, but it's also.
It is in hindsight. And I had to explain it to him. And then he was just like, well, what's wrong with the picture? What's wrong with the picture? I'm like, all right, well, we're covering a few topics today. And there wasn't anything dangerous, there wasn't anything really racy. It was just more of like, it's a very sexual picture for a 7-year-old. So I basically was explaining to him, I said, okay, well, in general, when you see illustrations of girls like this and the way they're lying there and all this kind of stuff, it's more so for teenagers and older as the target audience. But then what I later found out was that this fucking app actually downloaded a couple of other apps onto his tablet.
Oh no!
And based on the names of them, they looked like they were to track stuff that he uses his tablet for. Yes.
Yeah.
So out those went, and then I had to explain to him, it's like, okay, here's how it's extra bad. And it's like, so while it's loading and putting in all these, you know, like sexy pictures of girls and Pokemon, it's just downloading one nefarious thing after the other.
Oh,
after
my God.
The other.
Conversations I never thought I'd have today.
I don't worry about that.
Like conversations I didn't think I'd have to have today.
Ta-da!
Oh, my God. Wow.
But I don't have to worry about that if I just buy him a physical book
and
a book store.
You know, you can look at it before.
I give him the book. And unless Yeah, unless there's something in the words and how it's written or some other kind of thing like that.
Right, but you don't have to worry about it downloading anything. What you see is what you get. You don't have to worry about it downloading anything.
Right, exactly. That's his book, and whatever happens to that book doesn't affect all the other books. Like, if he rips out a page in the book, another kid halfway around the world with their own copy of that book doesn't open up, and all of a sudden page two is missing. Oh, yeah. What happened to it, you know? Whereas with digital, you can have a function that you really like. And since you admitted your age earlier, I'm going to say I'm a 49-year-old man. So I'm already at the very crotch of the age of just like, why'd they take it away? What? That's my favorite function.
Mm-hmm.
They changed the search function. I can't find anything anymore. Right. They deleted my bookmarks and all this other kind of stuff. Because the goal was to make it more pleasing for this very large audience. So there is an intimacy, there is a security, there is a comfort. When the power goes out, you don't have to worry about whether or not your book is charged.
Yeah.
You know, you just need to have a light source that you can read
it. Yeah.
And, you know, if you're blind and you can read Braille, then you don't even have to worry about that.
Yeah.
You just need to make sure that you don't, you know, cut your fingertips off. Even then, I'm sure you can find a way. I'm sure there's somebody out there, I'm sure there's many people out there that read Braille with their toes. And I think that's like an amazing image right there. Mm-hmm. So just imagine somebody doing something else, like say maybe making dinner while reading a book with their toes, you know, and all this other kind of stuff.
Indeed.
So, yeah, it's, you know... It is, I think, one of the main things for me is kind of like, you know, I think that's one of the other reasons why I still continue to like the idea of having that physical thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's very treasured, and it's not going to change unless I do something to it.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, we've covered quite a bit. We've covered pros and cons and things to think about. And yeah, I mean, because there's a lot, you know, there's a lot to think about and consider. Yep. And I hope anyone listening to this is also kind of thinking about this as stuff in their own purchases and their own, you know, journey in the RPG industry. You know, thinking about what they consume, how they consume it, how it makes them feel and stuff like that. You know what I mean? You know, and making sure that as we move and interpret RPGs in a more mainstream and digital way than have been done before, that we can move forward with good practices in mind and keeping in mind that, you know, we want the pros and not the negatives, you know, with all that comes with that sort of stuff. Because I think there's places for both. There's places for all of it. I mean, the accessibility, I mean, accessibility can work the other way too. Maybe digital isn't accessible to someone. Analog is, you know, analog isn't available to somebody. Digital is. So there has to be a place for both. There has to be a place for both. To make it accessible to the widest variety of people as possible. So we need to learn how to balance those out. We need to be able to do that. And we need to do that with Wicca too, you know. You know, because like I said, you know, it's relatively new and learn some ways to do it as well, you know. Learn things in Wicca while at the same time forging our own paths, you know. It's a big long group, and once again we have gone over time because I wondered at the beginning, I'm like, man, are we gonna be able to talk about this for an hour? But once again, I was proven wrong and that here we are having to put a stop to it because we just go. I certainly okay. If nothing else, I will say this at the end. Even if nobody else, even if we're the only ones here, nobody else is listening to this or getting anything out of it, I am getting something out of it. And I appreciate these discussions. And but I certainly hope other people are. But if nothing else,
me
I am.
Me too.
So,
yeah.
Any last thoughts on digital and analog and...
I made a note on here when you had mentioned accessibility just now and earlier in the recording, but I think that that's something that we could have as a different topic altogether, almost kind of like as a part two continuation of this, because, and not just by saying like, you know, accessible to a wider audience in the sense of like, you know, more people are able to find it, but it's about having something that more people are able to use.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that could be worth doing as a topic unto itself down the road.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how do we make sure that people who are neurodivergent, who are, you know, have other disabilities and things like that, how do we make sure that they have access? You know what I mean? You know, if the print is too small for something, how can we make sure they have access to print that they can read so they can read the information? If they have mobility concerns and they can't roll dice, how do we make sure that they can still participate? If they can't see certain things as well, how do we make sure that they can still participate? If they can't hear things as well, how do we make sure that they can still participate? Or even if they are completely deaf or cannot see at all, you know, how do we make sure that... Oh my gosh, the earth hates me. It's Earth Day, but that means that Mother Earth's bushes and trees and things do not like me. I don't know why. I don't know what I ever did, but for some reason, grasses and bushes and trees. So we're coming into spring, so it's making it worse. And I'm just like, why? I love you, Mother Earth. Why do you insist on
grasses and bushes and trees? Oh my.
I know, right? That's what I'm allergic to. Like, of all things, nothing I can get rid of. You know, I'm like, what are you allergic to? Planet Earth. Basically, I'm allergic to planet Earth. But anyway, how do we make sure that people who have any of these issues, you know, neurodivergent or any other physical issues, any physical disabilities, how do we make sure that they can participate? How do we make sure of that? What if somebody can't sit for a long time? You know, what if somebody can't sit for a long time and, you know, you can't expect them to sit, you know, do you need longer breaks? Do they need to lay down in a position to, you know, what do we need to do? Like that could be another whole hour long of like brainstorming ideas on how we can make things accessible. And that's why I was saying, like, digital and analog are both ways that we do that. Having both available and being ready to use both. And doing whatever somebody needs is definitely something that we can, I'm sure, find an hour to talk about at some point.
Yeah, we haven't come up short yet. I don't, to tell you the truth, I think the shortest episode we've ever released has been 1 hour and 1 minute.
Nice.
And what was our benchmark? I think we said like... half hour, 45 minutes, that should do, you know, and everything like that. Nah, that's not possible. No. It's not going to happen with us. So if you're listening for something that's just like a short bus ride away, you know, as far as like podcast length,
you might want to pick
you're just
something
on
else.
The wrong show. Yeah. That's not, you know, we're just, you think that something as what seems as narrowly focused as a podcast about gaming and magic. No, there is so much to really get into it, really, when it comes down to it. So, yeah, that's what happens.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. So, yeah, so let's add accessibility onto the topic list, and then we'll continue this from there.
Oh, we'll also need to make include, like, you know, safety measures, safety. All of that stuff is also a part of accessibility as well. You know, using the X card, using brakes, using stars and wishes, using all of those things are also part of accessibility as well. So we definitely need to make sure we include that as well. So when we talk about that stuff, share our best tips for doing those things and talk about things we've done in our games to make them more accessible and stuff like that. Because I'm sure I've done stuff. I'm sure you have too. So, you know, we can talk about that, talk about other stuff we've heard or what we wish people would do that they don't do. You know, I have hearing issues. Like, I'm hard of hearing. I'm fairly hard of hearing, especially with low voices. So sometimes if I'm like in person with somebody or I'm playing games, sometimes that can be difficult, you know, because I'm trying to like hear what's going on. So definitely certain measures and stuff like that are helpful for me. To make sure that I'm understanding what's going on, you know, having the GM check, let's say, okay, now I'm already starting the next episode, so I'm going to stop.
I was going to say, I think I'm going to have to close out the show. It's like, well, I guess we hope a little gaming in your magic. I do want to, I'll mention one thing. When we do go to have the talk about safety tools and measures and everything else like this, I think that might be one of those things where I might want to actually start talking about more specifics on what we did for the tower. For two reasons. One, that thing is like so, to me, it's the most safety tooled role-playing product.
Yeah. I don't even like content. I mean, the content requires it. Yeah. Like, there's no way you're going to be able to play something like that without, you know, having some, you know, something in place.
Deep, steep safety tools. Yeah. So that's one of the things. But it's also, too, because I'm at a point where I'm actually, so I'll just give a quick scenario, and then I promise we'll wrap up everybody. I promise. Just sit there and just be patient with me. And I know, maybe I could just stop being patient and all this kind of stuff. But anyways, is that I've always kept it a secret, and it's only the backers plus, like, you know, less than a handful of people that know what's actually going on with it. But it's one of those things where, because of everything that is going on with that subject matter, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, I'm really debating actually being more open about it and actually just releasing it to the wild because of, you know, what it's about and everything like that. And I think, so it's one of those things where it's like, I want to start kind of talking about it. And that could be my excuse to kind of say, like, well, I left the door wide open and now all the animals are inside eating everything in the kitchen. Oh, well. No going back now, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right, let's wrap this up. Okay. Let's wrap this up. We've definitely added like 5 minutes.
Yeah, 10 actually.
Woohoo!
Definitely, if you're listening to this, let us know how you feel about digital versus analog. Like, anything that we have said that may have resonated with you, anything that we haven't mentioned that talked about as digital versus analog and saving space and access, anything like that, definitely let us know. There's a variety of ways you can do that. Hit me up on Twitter, hit us up on Facebook, hit us up on Discord, whatever you would like to do, hit us up and talk to us. And until next time, we wish you a little gaming in your magic and a little magic in your gaming.
The Covenstead Podcast was created and produced by Danielle Delisle and Todd Crapper. Theme music written and composed by John Thompson from the Rook and Rask channel on Twitch. Definitely check them out. Special thanks to all of our backers, Alex, Tim Brannan, Chris Atrata, Century Guild, Nicholas Diak, Fool's Moon Entertainment, Kaboom.com, -50s, no apologies, Brian P. Kurtz, Jason LeDuc, Civ Light, Revna, Derek Simsek, Danielle Thomas, Phil Watson, Jacob Wood, and Victor Wyatt.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Wait, I have one more idea!